Hello, everybody, and welcome to your Friday edition of the Blood Red Podcast. I'm your host, Theo Squires, and congratulations, you've successfully navigated another international break. We're back to the big football, the club football, and it doesn't get much bigger, does it? Manchester City versus Liverpool. Joining me today to preview it, it's Paul Gorst, our Liverpool correspondent, home and away, Ian Doyle, our senior Liverpool writer, and Beth Lindop, our women's correspondent. I don't think I've seen you two gents at all during this break. You've had a nice couple of weeks off, hopefully reporting back injury-free. How are you both?
But I'm not injury-free. There's a dummy knee playing a thing at Melbourne yesterday, the Anfield experience. When I can't even say that, can I? Went head over heels, shall we say, playing that. But other than that, yeah, good to be back. The last international break now until March, isn't it? And I think we're glad to see the back of them. I know certainly Jürgen Klopp is, because he keeps getting lumbered with the R12 on the other side of it. So, we're just about to hit the home stretch for Christmas, and games coming left, right and centre, and I think we're all ready for it.
And I'm 47 years of age. Everything hurts all the time. So just getting up in the morning is a bit of an event. And by the way, let's pick you up on the international break. You absolutely love the international break. You love it. You just love international football.
I won't go that far.
Yeah, I probably would. If it was you, yeah.
I don't know. It's just nice to get out and about and speak to some players, because it's a bit limited at times, isn't it? Especially when they're not doing well. At least they're doing well at the moment. Anyway, Beth, it's not been the best time for the women, but how are you doing?
Yeah, not too bad. I mean, I have sort of a double whammy of international breaks. So it is, as one door closes, another opens. We've got another women's international break next week, which is a pain. But at least the Reds are back, so gives us lots to talk about.
Before we dive into all the Man City stuff, we have had a big stadium update this week. Over to you for the story, because I think you wrote the story yesterday. Anfield Road End will be ready for the start of the year, confirmed, and we're going to have a Manchester United game as the one to open it half, is it?
I think they don't know when the whole upper tier is going to be open yet, so they're not really saying that, and you can't blame them after what's happened already with this, you know, certain dates and them selling tickets for games that never, you know, the seats never actually existed for some of them. But they've announced that we reckon about half of the upper tier will be open for the Manchester United game onwards, which doesn't seem like a lot when you think it's December the 17th. But Liverpool have four home games between then and January the 1st, and the three of them are big. Well, yeah, I'd probably argue that all four of them are big ones: United, Arsenal, and Newcastle in the Premier League, and West Ham in a cup quarter final. So it's a good time for Liverpool to get more fans in. And of course, the funny thing is that there'll have been those fans who had tickets for those games initially, certainly United game, then went, "Oh, we can't go." Cancelled travel plans, and then they've now got an opportunity to go back and actually go to the game. So I think they'd be more than willing to take the hit, though, if they're going to get inside Anfield and watch a game against United.
Anyway, we've had a Jurgen Klopp's press conference today. You were there, Gorsty. I think it's quite normal for him when he's got these big games to not give too much away.
Yeah.
There were a couple of interesting lines, and we obviously had the injury update yesterday that pretty much everyone's fit. What have you learnt from it?
Yeah, it wasn't what I expected, actually. I thought he might get peppered with questions about Everton's points deduction and stuff like that. Normally, Sky Sports, when they kind of take the lead on these press conferences at the beginning, being the rights holders, they normally ask the managers across the league about the burning issue of the league at the time. And that, for me, would have been expected. But he only really got asked it towards the end, didn't he? And he kind of played it the straight bat, which I was a little bit surprised about, so he doesn't always do that. But most of the talk was about his record at Man City. There was some talk about Darwin Nunes, was there? Did he get asked about Nunes?
Yeah, Nunes and Salah.
Salah's kind of understanding with him. But it was all just previewing the game, wasn't it? Liverpool's toughest away day of the season, without question. I suppose if you ask the other kind of 18 teams in the league, you know, what's your hardest away game of the season, I think it'd be a toss-up between the Etihad and Anfield. So for Liverpool, it's their toughest one. Not got a great record there after they haven't won this since 2015. It's going to be tough. But the good news is, you know, he's got Gomez, Canate back. Club have obviously made special provisions for the South American quartet. So they're going there with a good bill of health, really. So it's going to be fascinating, I think.
And Doyle, he was in good spirits as well, wasn't he, joking about that 12:30 kickoff that we know he loves so much?
Yeah, well, he's admitted it now, hasn't he? He said that he absolutely loves 12:30 kickoffs.
Changed the tune, hasn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, we all love
the 12:30s, don't we? Because we get a breakfast at the games, which is always a nice little bonus.
Yeah, they're right when they're in Manchester. Yeah, not so much when they're in Bournemouth.
Was it the Manchester breakfast last year that was a bit weird because it had like the fish in it as well?
Oh, apparently they recently had beef. there as well. So you had bacon, sausage, eggs, beef.
And the beef was good there, the Premier League winner.
Well, they always get the perennial beef. very good there. The other thing that he mentioned in his press conference was Alexis McAllister. He got asked, didn't he, about him. And the question was kind of phrased around without saying he's not really number six, but was that the point he was getting to? And Klopp's like, well, is he a natural one? No, he says. But then he said, well, football's changed over the last couple of years, so maybe that role's changed. You don't just want somebody in there who can just go around, boot people up in the air, block people, and then when it comes
how I play football.
Well, yeah. But then when it comes to actually passing it, they're absolutely hopeless or don't want to do it. And I think the inference there is obviously McAllister is a player who can do the passing. We know that, though. The problem's always been what's his positioning like as a defensive midfielder. How easy can he get to the ball? How often is he knocked off it? That kind of thing. And you know, you wouldn't expect Klopp to say anything else, but it was interesting that he put it in the context of it being a new style of a number six.
Yeah.
But then you look at Manchester City and they've got very much the epitome of presumably now the old style number six in Rodri.
Yeah, he can do both though, can't he? Mm. He is probably the preeminent number six in world football.
There's not many number sixes who've scored winners in Champions League finals, although somebody's now going to watch this podcast and reply with about seven of them straight off. So, so there is that. But yeah, McAllister, Klopp's going to say all of that because he knows quite well that this is going to be his number six. From what we're led to believe, what we've heard or the suggestions is that they're not going to buy number six in January or not certainly at the moment and not looking at it, which we've all got our own views on that, shall we say, and some supporters have as well. Don't forget that Endo's there as well, but he's only started two Premier League games. Did well against Brentford last time out, but Brentford at home is not the same as Manchester City away, which is, of course, you just said, it's probably the most difficult game ever. Apart from obviously Stoke City away on a Tuesday night. So I do think that we will get onto our team selection obviously a little bit later on this. It'll be interesting to see what we all do.
I want to follow up now with Salah and Nunes. Obviously, Klopp's been quite positive about them and their partnership. Beth, you like both players a lot, as do all of Liverpool fans. And it could be quite a big weekend for Mo Salah. I think he's on 149 Premier League goals, 198 Liverpool goals altogether. What have you made of their blossoming partnership?
Yeah, I mean, it's been fantastic to see, hasn't it? I think, you know, Mo Salah quietly sort of goes about his business, doesn't he? And I think even if he's not sort of reached the heights of when he first came to the club, he's still, you know, leading the way in a number of metrics in the league. And he's just a phenomenal talent, isn't he? And I think that partnership with Nunes is fantastic. Obviously, it's very hard to replicate the sort of numbers and the sort of the almost telepathic connection that Mane, Salah and Firmino had in a front three. But I think, you know, when you look at the amount of goals that they've sort of laid on for each other, I think, is it Nunes assisted Salah nine times now or eight times, something like that?
Yeah, it's certainly around that figure, isn't it?
It's all the goals Nunes has assisted is for Salah.
That's it, yeah. Yeah.
I'd like to say congratulations because I tried to say that stat a couple of weeks ago and butchered it completely. Doyle had to bail me out to tell Joe what it actually was.
So, I mean, that just speaks volumes, doesn't it, about sort of the connection that they've got sort of version in between the two of them. And I think, you know, it's a credit to Nunes as well. I think he's obviously more of a conventional number nine, isn't he? But equally, his ability to bring other players into the game, and especially Salah into the game as well, is obviously there. And I think, obviously, if both of them, I think there'll be goals tomorrow. Again, we'll get to our score predictions later on. But, you know, I imagine at least one of them will be on the score sheet tomorrow. I think Liverpool's problem will be, can they handle, you know, can they resist the Manchester City attack? I'm not too sure. But I think from an attacking perspective, you know, that there's so much for Liverpool to be positive about. And I think, you know, we've talked a lot on the pod lately about Nunes and about Salah. And then you forget of the likes of Cody Gakpo and what he can bring to this team as well. And obviously Luis Diaz now, obviously with all that being resolved with his family. And Diogo Jota, who just seems to score. I think the best Diogo Jota description I've ever heard was Joe Rimmer when he said he just scores the most snide goals ever. He'll play 90 minutes, do virtually nothing, and then he'll score. So, Liverpool have such a wealth of attacking talent now, and Darwin Nunez and Mo Salah are just central to that.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app.
Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
I quite enjoyed Klopp's comments on Salah, where he was trying to describe how he's changed, and the way that he described it was very convoluted, but he more or less said, yeah, when he first got here, he was dead selfish and now he's less selfish. That was basically what he was trying to say. But he did couch it in the terms that probably the reason he was quite selfish at the beginning, because he felt as though he needed to prove something to himself, to the fans, to people who, you know, doubted him when he was at Chelsea, and also the manager, which is why in that first season he scored so many goals. But you look at him now, and it was Thomas Frank, wasn't it, who said it after the last game.
Yeah.
He says, look, you know, how good is this? You know, it kind of not so much goes under the radar, but I think it's taken for granted a little bit. I mean, we've written every other month, we write a story saying, like, is Salah taken for granted? And I think when he stops playing for Liverpool, you'll suddenly realise, like, within like a year or two, you'll sit back and go, wow, he was good.
Mm.
And you don't really notice it as much in the moment. But again, going back to me being old, you kind of notice these things a bit more. The more players you see, it's just experience. Same as he's got experience in his playing career. Anybody who's watched a lot of football, you can tell when someone's really good. The more players you see. And Salah is, for me, one of the best players that's ever played for Liverpool. So there you go.
I think it's interesting as well, because I think sort of in the summer, it was almost like a foregone conclusion with him not having moved to Saudi last summer, that, you know, next summer, or if not January, that he'd maybe be on his way. And that was sort of a foregone conclusion. But I think when you watch him, and he's still performing at such a high level, and we know he's so competitive, isn't he? And he wants to smash records left, right and centre. And I just can't imagine in a year's time he's going to want to relinquish playing, you know, at the highest level in Europe. I mean, I might be proven wrong, and I know money talks and all sorts, but I just, when you look at him now and the form that he's in, I'd love him to stay at Liverpool beyond next summer.
You can get another 2 seasons out of him at least, I think, on top of this one. You know, he'll only be 32 in June, which in old money is probably when you start looking towards your retirement. But it's different now, isn't it? You know, look at Lionel Messi, just won the World Cup there in December last year, and he's 36, is he? Cristiano Ronaldo, okay, he's in Saudi Arabia, but he was still scoring Premier League goals for Manchester United when he was 37, 38.
Not many, though. Not many.
No, but
he did in the first
United
season.
United weren't great, but he was still scoring goals, wasn't he? He was still their top scorer. Zlatan Ibrahimovic, still at Milan when he was 40.
Giroud's doing it now, of course, at AC Milan.
Sorry?
Giroud.
Yeah, to a lesser extent. Lewandowski was obviously still one of Barcelona's main men, wasn't he? And he's 33, maybe 34. So I think the top players look after themselves better, and no one's more professional than Salah. So I just don't get this idea that because he's in his 30s, that his powers are on the wane, that certainly not this season. I think Liverpool have got a big decision to make. I think he has as well, and there needs to be some communication between his agents and the club and whatever else. But I just hope that he doesn't kind of shuffle off to Saudi when he's still one of the best players in the world. It'd be a massive shame.
Sticking with you for this one, Gusty, because I think you wrote the original piece when it all happened. We're talking 5 years ago. When the City Amazon Prime documentary came out, there was the famous quotes from Guardiola saying he was scared of Liverpool's attack. And the managers, both of them today, have said the teams are very different to when they were facing each other then. But Liverpool's attack still lines up a similar sort of way. They take advantage of those spaces in behind, and Guardiola's come out and said his side play a way that suits Liverpool. Might not be. Mane's not there. Firmino's not there. And Salah still is. But that front five is so dangerous now. There's so much pace. Even though you don't know who's going to start, they're going to cause City problems, you'd like to think.
Yeah, I mean, they've scored 35 goals between them, actually. I don't think there's been a game when, well, there hasn't been a game where at least one of them hasn't scored. So if you manage to keep the three you start quiet, there's two off the bench who you might not be able to keep quiet. And there's loads of options there in terms of what they've all got quality-wise. They're all very different types of players, and I think that will only help Liverpool. I think counter-attack-wise is where Liverpool can possibly get at City tomorrow, with Nunez's pace and Salah's pace. There was a goal Liverpool scored in the League Cup last year when they obviously got beat, but I think Oxlade-Chamberlain released Nunez, and Nunez played it for Salah, and Salah scored. And it was very simplistic in its execution, but it was because Liverpool had the pace to make the most of the space in behind, and I think that might be how they're going to have to play it tomorrow. But the question is whether Klopp is willing to make provisions. He doesn't really tend to do that for any team, and will he do it for City away? I'm not sure, but I do think there is some joy to be had for Liverpool tomorrow.
Donnie, you've already alluded to it already, I think, with the South Americans and coming back from the international break. Obviously, there's been a lot talked about this each international break, how they're coming back late. But Liverpool have made provisions. They have got them back that little bit earlier. They were in training yesterday. Is there any concern that they're not going to be fit, raring to go for this game? Or can you have that trust now? Yeah, go and get the job done.
I don't know, is the answer to that. I'm not Ben, so I don't see their physical state. However, what I would say is that they're going to have more chance of being in a better state than they were after the Wolves game, where they didn't make many, if any, provisions. And McAllister got subbed at half-time, and Diaz was limited. The second, I think Nunes as well was limited to the second half. And
came on at half-time, didn't they?
Yeah. Yeah,
they both played well, didn't they?
Yeah, McAllister did not play well. And that goes back to what, you know, he needs to play well. Presumably he's going to play against City tomorrow. So I wouldn't be too concerned about that. I think the players themselves have got their heads around it. And also, there's the whole fact that it's technically a home game, let's be honest. Manchester's not that far away. And it's such a big game. How can you not be up for it anyway? Even if you're a bit tired. I'm pretty sure Man City have got players who are a bit knackered after the after their internationals.
But this is one where the internationals, Liverpool had like 10 players playing on the last day, which was the Tuesday, and then four of them were playing the early hours of Wednesday. City only had three. So small margins, we know how small margins can decide these games. There is that added concern to it, whether they have to be at the peak physical condition.
But let's be honest, that's probably not going to decide this game, is it? Let's be honest, I don't think there is. I think there's bigger things that are going to happen in this game rather than one of the players getting a bit tired in the 85th minute as opposed to the 95th. Although now that I've said that, again, someone's going to lose a little bit of pace and someone will run away from somebody and score.
Is it Europa League next week?
It is, yes. That's on the Thursday.
You'd imagine the City's game in the Champions League will be more important.
I think it's going to be on Tuesday.
That's why the Liverpool game is on the Saturday, because they couldn't do it on the Sunday because City are on the Tuesday.
Yeah.
And also, they're through anyway, though, so.
But do you imagine most of them are going to get a rest, aren't they, Liverpool-wise, for next week? So they're not going to be playing until the following week. So maybe, you know, if they are a little bit fatigued or whatever, it can be something that they can just push through for this one and just get through.
And the other thing on top of that is that they've got four players who didn't play for the last 2 or 3 weeks because they've been injured. So they're going to be, you know.
Well, Curtis Jones barely played for 2 months.
Well, that's it. Curtis Jones, was it Ryan Gravenberch, Joe Gomez,
some of the ones who were on international squad.
And Tsimikas came back early.
Yeah, Tsimikas came back early. Jota didn't play in their last game. Gareth was a late sub against Gibraltar.
There you go. It's not that bad, really.
Made it all positive now, haven't you?
Fine.
Beth, it is a trip to the Etihad, and let's be honest, Liverpool's record there is not great in recent years. They've only won once there against Guardiola. I think the one league win under Klopp, and that was, what, 2015? You did the piece last week.
Emre Can's back heel.
Are you concerned by that? Is this the time Liverpool are going to finally get that monkey off the back?
I don't know about that. I mean, I think it's always nerve-wracking when you go to the Etihad. As you say, the recent record there has been poor. And it's maybe one of those grounds. I suppose we see it in the other way with City coming to Anfield. Is, you know, when did they last win at Anfield in front of fans? It was, you know, a long time.
Nicholas and Alfie had the winner. Yeah.
Long time ago. And you
do you even remember that one?
No, I don't actually. but yeah, so you look at that and you think, is there a psychological element to that with City coming to Anfield? And obviously, you know, we're very biased, but you probably say the Anfield atmosphere is a lot more imposing and threatening than the atmosphere at the Etihad. But yeah, maybe there is a little bit of a psychological element that's developed there as well. I think obviously Liverpool last season, it was hugely disappointing. I think Klopp said that this morning in his press conference, you know, that result, regardless of the disparity between the two sides last season, you never want to go to sort of your biggest rivals, your biggest recent rivals and you know, lose it in the manner that they did last season. So I don't think it will be as comprehensive a victory for Manchester City tomorrow if Manchester City go on to win. I think it'll be a lot closer. I think there'll be goals. I think Manchester City can be got at this season, and I think that's something that we've obviously touched on a little bit on the pod so far this season. But I think, you know, defensively they've got the vulnerabilities and they can be exploited. And I think in a way sometimes I fear for Liverpool more playing against the teams at the bottom of the league who are going to sort of sit back in that low block, and because that's when Liverpool historically have tended to struggle in breaking those teams down. And actually, you know, as Guardiola referenced earlier on, when Liverpool can counter-attack and show their pace and how fearsome they can be on the attack, then, you know, that's when they can have some real joy. So I am nervous, I'm not going to lie. I'm not feeling incredibly confident about it. But I do think that it, you know, it won't be, I don't think Liverpool will roll over. I think they will definitely provide stern opposition tomorrow.
Gorsley, we seem to be saying this every week, but the midfield battle, it is big for Liverpool. That number six, that debate is always going to go on. I think Rodri missed a game in the international break, but he's back. How are you thinking Liverpool going to line up against them, whether it's McAllister or Endo in that number six position? It is something that is going to decide this game. And for Liverpool, there is that lack of quality there compared to a player like Rodri.
Yeah, I mean, Rodri, like I said before, is probably the best at that position, isn't he? But I think it'll just come down to everyone having to put in a shift. Klopp said basically, you know, McAllister has the six works well when the team works well. So it's just about closing spaces, isn't it? And I think the big issue for City is no Kevin De Bruyne. You know, he's normally superb in these games, and he just finds the pockets of space. So then he's the most creative player on the pitch. The amount of times he finds space is just incredible, really. So that'll be a big miss for City, a big bonus for Liverpool. But I think, I mean, the Trent situation for me is going to be massive. You know, he's going to move into midfield when he can and look to play those passes. And we know he's been doing that for, what, 8 months or so now, hasn't he? But Jeremy Doku on the left side for City has been in great form since he moved from... Where did he move from? Rennes, was it? Yeah, in France. So that's going to be a key battle, I think. You know, he looks an electric player when I've seen him for City and for Belgium. So that's going to be the big one for me, possibly more than the midfield battle.
And Doyle, you spoke to Trent, I think, was it after the Brentford game when he was talking about two City players have helped inspiring him for playing that inverted role. It was the City defeat last time that was like what kick-started the change of formation. That's when Liverpool had to respond. What was it like Trent was saying there, and how do you think it goes up against City when it is a side that have been playing this formation a lot longer and it's where Liverpool have got that inspiration from?
Well, you can draw a line in the sand, can't you, after that game? Because it was after that they changed the formation and they've only lost one Premier League game since then. Is it 20 odd, something like 23?
Yeah, and that was 23, Tottenham, wasn't it? With the five asterisks next to it.
Yeah, that's when they had a goal allowed and then didn't appear on the score sheet, which was...
they'd be top of the table.
This is the thing,
yeah. Own goal.
So, yes, he did mention Rodri and John Stones. I think he mentioned some other players. Well, I say I think he did. I just can't remember them.
It was a couple of weeks ago.
Quite a lot's happened since then.
Did someone ask him about those players, though, or did he offer?
No, he offered him. He said are there any players that... And he said, yeah, obviously at Man City, there's John Stones. And there's also Rodri. He says, I obviously watched Stevie G when I was growing up. And he mentioned PLO.
Yeah.
And I think Lam was another one, I think. Or I may have just made that up. He may have mentioned that in the past, actually. So, you know, aim high. players, yeah. If he's going to do the job, may as well do it properly. He did say, though, that, you know, he said it in that one, or he certainly said it recently, where he knows he's this different kind of player to most of the others, as in not them, just any kind of footballer. And Liverpool have always tried to embrace that. It'll be interesting to see what happens on Saturday at City, because... if he's going into midfield, I mean, to be fair, he has mentioned this, where he's picks and chooses the times now. Doesn't have to do it all the time. I think it was the game, we mentioned this before, earlier in the season against Aston Villa at home, where Villa had played against Liverpool towards the end of last season, was it the last home game? And they just flooded the middle to try and get the ball off Trent and had someone running down the wing or whatever. You know, they had this kind of thing, and Liverpool just couldn't work it out at all for about an hour. But this time, Trent chose not to go in there, and the winger had tucked in, and he just kind of just was there. He didn't know what to do, and Trent controlled the game from right back. So, I mean, I'm not saying he's going to control the game against Man City. Who does? You know, but I don't think it necessarily means that he's going to be going to midfield all the time, even if he plays the inverted right-back role, and that will all depend on how the midfield shapes up anyway, which if I was in charge, they wouldn't be doing that anyway. So for this game, at least. But it adds variety to Liverpool's play. And yes, if you're going to pick somebody to base your game on in that respect. I was surprised he said Rodri, by the way, because he is a defensive midfielder, isn't he?
He's the archetypal defensive midfielder, isn't he?
Trent's already thinking, long-term, I want to be playing in midfield, as he has done for England. Little nod to the international break there.
Well, we know he considers himself as a midfielder for England, doesn't he? So,
well, he's on the squad list as a midfielder, isn't he? So he isn't for Liverpool, but I think this is a game, as you said before, this is one where, never mind his midfield abilities, let's see what he's like defensively. He's done it before, did he, against Sarri famously in that 2018 game. So,
Beth, before we move on to the teams, a nice little time for women's roundup from you. And it's not been the best few weeks for Liverpool. They have lost a few games. Where's that loss of form come from?
I don't think it's time to panic, really. I mean, they've made an excellent start to the season, really. I think it's 11 points they've got. And I think at this stage last season, they had about five. So, they've really improved from last term. And I think, you know, they've had, you know, some really big wins, obviously, against Arsenal at the Emirates on the opening day. And they've been excellent at times. They've played some really good football. I think they've recruited really shrewdly. And I think for the first time, I think sort of the times last season, I was watching them and I was thinking sort of in comparison to the Chelseas and the Arsenals, you know, how are Liverpool going to close that gap? And I didn't feel like the ingredients were there for them to be able to do that anytime soon. And I think, you know, it still will be a while. I think there'll be a couple of transfer windows before they're really sort of vying for the top honours in the league. But I think this season you've seen from the club a real concerted effort to get behind the women's team in a way that they've not done for a long while. Obviously, they've moved into Melwood. As I say, they've signed some good players. So I think overall it's been a positive start. As you say, the last week has been disappointing, really. They obviously went away to Chelsea last weekend at Stamford Bridge, and they made a liar of me, really, because the day before I'd written an article saying how good they'd been defensively. I think before that Chelsea game, they conceded the joint least amount of goals with Chelsea in the league, and then they shipped five at Stamford Bridge. Chelsea can do that to anyone, to be honest. And, you know, Lauren James got a hat trick, and she's just a phenomenal talent. We've seen that for club and country. So, a disappointing afternoon. And I think sometimes in those games, when you go a few goals down, you capitulate a little bit. And I think that's maybe what happened. And then I was at Prenton Park in midweek for a League Cup game with Manchester United, and they lost that 1-1-0, but it was much closer, and they probably should have got an equaliser at the end. So, positives to take from both games and from the season overall, and a big game on Sunday against Brighton at Prenton Park. And if they can win that one, then they're going into the international break in really good shape.
Could be a nice little Liverpool doubleheader then, fingers crossed.
Let's hope so. 6 points from the two games would do me fine, yeah.
Now onto the teams, and I'm sure we're all going to say Alisson starts in goal, even though he's had to do the international break when Edison got spared. But back four, what were you all thinking? Of course, he started with you.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose the big question is who partners Van Dijk. Is it going to be Konate who's come back or Matip? That's been a call that's been easier to make than other times over the last couple of years. Like, sometimes it's been a lot closer between them. Sometimes Konate's been in far better form. So I don't really know what to do with this one. I might go with Konate, and obviously I'll keep Tsimikas at left back.
Who's your right back then, Trent?
Yeah, yeah.
What about you, Beth? you just made a noise there.
I'm going to go Konate and Van Dijk, Tsimikas. I think sometimes Klopp against City has made a few quirky little choices, so I'm going to go Joe Gomez at right back, with the reason that I'm going to put Trent in midfield.
So that makes me feel better about myself, yeah. What I'm about to say.
Intrigued now.
Konate, he's going to have to play purely on the basis that he's fast. And I think it's Trent who will be playing right back. He's going to need a bit of help, isn't he? Van Dijk's obviously going to play. And I will play Joe Gomez, but I play him at left back. Tsimikas has played 26 minutes against Man City in his entire career, I think it is.
No.
Yeah. And one of those was his first game for Liverpool, where he came on 5 minutes when they got beat 4-1 at home. So while he was a lot better against Brentford, by his own admission, he's not been great. And it was interesting that Joe Gomez played left back against Luton, which, to be fair, was probably the wrong game to play him in, because Luton just didn't offer really very much going forward. And Liverpool needs, you know, Tsimikas is better going forward. But I will play Gomez at left back just to help shore things up because of what else I've got going on in the team.
Sticking with you in midfield, there's a few players we hope in are back from injury. They've been back in training, Gravenberch and Jones.
Yeah.
Are they either of them starting?
One of them is, yeah.
One of them. Yeah. And I guess Jones.
It is Jones, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, he's playing. But he's not playing on the left side of the midfield. He's playing in a two alongside McAllister.
Oh, change of formation.
So we're going to go 4-2-3-1. So Jones will be on the left, McAllister on the right. And Szoboszlai can kind of be in front of them, kind of floating or helping out the front three. Now, part of the reason for that is obviously because I don't really think McAllister can do the whole number six thing on his own. But I also think that you need Curtis in there for this game. I think he's someone who can keep hold of the ball, he's someone who knows the game, he's someone who I think Liverpool have missed, that he's not been playing. And he can add a little bit of composure, which is what they're going to need. Also, I think he did this, I know Wolves away, he's not Man City away. Second half, he played well in the two
although that was alongside Szoboszlai. So, yeah, I'd do that. And also, what can happen, though, is he can shift across to the left if Trent comes into midfield, if he fancies it for a little bit. So, method in my madness. See, I've thought about this. Is it unlike the
old? That's why you've had 2 weeks off, haven't you?
Exactly, yeah.
2 weeks off at home to think about this. What about you, Beth? Are you going to change formation or go with something? Oh, you said Trent in midfield, but what are you doing?
You did make a really compelling argument there for Joe Gomez at left back. I'm not going to lie. It's made me doubt my choices, but I'm going to have courage in my convictions, and it's never going to happen, but I'm just going to whack Trent in midfield. Why not? Stranger things have happened, and he's going to go in there alongside McAllister and Szoboszlai.
But you, Gosty?
Yeah, I can see the merits in Dooley's team selection. I think, you know...
What's that saying about Betts?
No, I was just thinking specifically with Jones as the holding midfielder, which I haven't really seen, have we, since pre-season, other than the second half against Wolves. I mean, I think at times it's going to have to be 3 holding midfielders against City, particularly if they've managed to pilfer a goal on a counter-attack with the forward players that we've spoken about. So yeah, I'm gonna go with Jones over Gravenberch and obviously McAllister and Szoboszlai.
And your front three, I'm assuming Salah starts on the right, but 2 from 4 you've got with the South Americans coming back.
Yeah, I mean, just because I just like having on the pitch Nunes down the middle, but I can see the argument for Gakpo and I can see the argument for Jota over Diaz as well. But just because I like to see Diaz and Nunes, I'm going to go with those two.
Again, both. I'd split them. I'd do Nunes from the start, Diaz on the bench, because Jota's got a very good record against Man City.
And plus, he's more of a workhorse, isn't he, in terms of...
He always seems to start at the Etihad because of that.
Yeah,
I'm going to go Jota on the left, Nunes through the middle. I think he had that brilliant game, didn't he, against City at Anfield, and then he got injured. Jota?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm going to put Jota in there and then Diaz to come on in the second half if they need a goal.
In further signs of preparation, Mohamed Salah, who's going to be playing on the right, he has scored 11 goals against Man City for Liverpool. And the only team that he scored more against for Liverpool is?
Manchester United
with 12.
I can also tell you he's got the joint goal contributions with United because he's got one more assist against City.
If you look at that, you know, how good is a player is Mohamed Salah, which is what we were saying before. It's like, well, there you go. There you go. Because he's only been at Liverpool for, what, 5-6 seasons now? Is it 6 seasons? Say only. That's a long time for a modern footballer. But most people who are setting records like that have been there 10, 11, 12 years, like someone like Ian Rush or Roger Hunt. So he's on the right. Nunes down the middle. He's got to play. He's just...
3 goals in the international break.
Yeah. I think he's somebody who, as we mentioned on a recent podcast, all the debate over him's over. Now it's just, when do we play him? And on the left, you mentioned Jota. Every time Jota's been fit as a Liverpool player, he started against Man City in the league. The only game of any repute that he hasn't played in and the start was the FA Cup semi-final.
He'd just come back from injury. Exactly.
So Jota's going to play on the left for me. And that also means that down the left, you've got this. Gomez, Jones, Jota, get stuck in, get a bit of, you know, a little bit of class there.
Bit narrow though, isn't it? All cutting in.
You've got enough width elsewhere, haven't you, if you really want it?
I will counter that by saying if they've got Phil Foden there, he's cutting in anyway.
Exactly, yeah. And also, Man City, let's be honest, Man City scored 2 goals. One is to get to the byline and cut it back. The other one is just to pass the way through the middle. Or, you know, whether that's passing it over the top or passing it to Haaland just to run onto, or just intricate passing. So if you bung up the middle, it annoys them a bit, forces them to go out wide. And I think Liverpool certainly got Gomez and Jota on that side. Would you be concerned about Trent and Salah? But I think Salah actually works a lot harder than people give him credit for, so I wouldn't really be too worried.
We spoke about the midfield and where it might be won or lost, haven't we? We spoke about Trent against Doku, but Haaland against Van Dijk is going to be a big one as well, isn't it? Van Dijk tends to do well in general against Haaland.
So he's only lost one, and that was the League Cup game. Would he play in the League Cup game?
Van Dijk wouldn't have done that. I don't think so. Didn't he?
I can't remember who played in that one, to be honest, that League Cup game.
Matip Gomez and the one he lost was left back. And was I right back? I don't know. He was the right back. I can't remember now.
So long ago.
It wasn't Trent because he played for England. I don't know.
Sort of erase that from our memories. Anyway.
Yeah. Milner? Could have been Milner, actually.
Cavalier played, I know that.
And then he got subbed
for Oxlade Chamberlain at half time. Nunes, Salah, and then 3 of them. Bessetic played.
Yeah.
And then there would have been, it was Henderson playing? No, he wouldn't have been there. Why are we even talking about this goal?
I don't know. score predictions, sure, why not?
Oh, 3 or 4-1 to Man City. I know we said this beforehand, but...
That's because you got your goal as a left back.
No, if it was my team, it's like 7-0 to Liverpool, obviously. I just think Liverpool are a good team who can become a better team, but I don't think that they're yet. And Man City, for whatever reason, they beat Liverpool 4-1, 4-0, 5-0. There's been various, you know, circumstances for it, explanations for it. One, Mane booted Edison in the face. Second one, they were still on the lash after winning the league. The third one, they're not very good. But I think Liverpool are better than that 4-1. If they do lose 4-1, it'll be because they'll have gone down all guns blazing. But I do think City... I think this is a big game for City. I genuinely think this is a really big game for City.
Coming off a draw.
Well, it's not even so much that. The 1-hour game they played this season against Arsenal, they got beat. And you saw they reacted after that. And the other thing for them is that, I know it's not a big thing overall, but if they win, is it 24 home games in a row that they've won? And that's the record in English football. They're currently level with Sunderland, I think it is, from, again, more homework. See,
that's not someone I'd have guessed for holding that
exactly,
record.
Yeah, I think it's Sunderland 1892-3, something like that. So even
Remember
I wasn't
well.
Even born then. Yeah, I've got in there first. So yeah, I think it's a big game for City. But let's be honest, right? If Man City win, how many people are surprised? Nobody. And I think it's a good test for Liverpool. I think they'll put up a good fight. If they want to get anything from the game, what will have to happen is Liverpool will have to play it very, very well. The tactics will have to be spot on. And City are going to have a slight issue somewhere along the line, whether it's form, fitness, things not going quite going their way. That's the only way Liverpool are going to win.
Beth, a more positive score prediction, please.
Well, as Trent's in my midfield, it's all going to be fine. So I'm going to go 2-2. I think there'll be goals both ways. I actually wouldn't be surprised if it ended up like Doyle said there, but I do. I'm going to be a bit more confident and say 2-2.
Can I just say I'm not being negative? I was actually speaking positively about Liverpool then, because they're only 12 league games into this brand new team, and I think people are getting a little bit carried away. I think they've got the makings of a very good team. You've seen in their attack, as Gorty said before, they just score from all angles. Midfield, we know there's one big issue. Whether or not they change the whole team around just tactically so that it covers for that, which is what Klopp was trying to get at in his press conference. Defensively, Van Dijk and Alisson in particular, they've shown why they were, or probably one of them at least, is still the best in the world in their position of late. So I do think there's a lot to be positive about. But Manchester City won the treble last year. And we've managed to get all the way through this podcast without mentioning all the other things that people have been talking about all week about Man City. But
sometimes we're not bitter. We don't need to talk about
it. Yeah, one point being is that...
And it's because we did a podcast special on it last Monday.
sometimes we, you know, look at the situation. That Liverpool are back competing with Manchester City again. That's the main thing this season, because back in August, nobody would have expected that.
Well, you mentioned about that line drawn the sand after the City game in April. Liverpool have only lost once since then. And only City have got more points than them in 23 games. I think City have played 22. So, you know, for all the kind of emerging Liverpool narrative that you were painting there, which I agree with, also, whatever they've changed since that game has clearly got them back.
They've been emerging from towards the end of last season, but it's the fact that they've got so many new players in one specific area of the team that I think... Are we surprised that Liverpool are as high up the table as they are now? Especially when you bear in mind the fixtures that they've had as well.
Depends when you're asking. If you're asking after the Chelsea game...
No, I'm asking before the season starts.
Well, that's even worse, isn't it? They haven't got the full midfield revamp done by then. Is it a surprise that they've done well from that point?
I agree with Gorsi, though. I think coming into this season, I think me and Joe have said this before, obviously, the priority was top four, but I wouldn't have completely ruled Liverpool out of challenging for the title.
Do you expect them to be challenging for the title at the end of the season? Taking over the podcast here, by the way.
No. I think not having a real sort of world-class holder midfielder will come back to bite them, ultimately. But
yeah, I couldn't agree more with that. But I don't expect Liverpool to... don't think they'll finish lower than third.
I agree with that.
You don't win the title in November, but if they don't win tomorrow, they're not going to win it.
If they don't win tomorrow, they're not going to win it.
Yeah, they won't have a chance. Because like you look at the...
Or if they draw.
Even then, that's probably not going to be enough, because you think the small margins with Man City in the past...
No, I'm not. And my scoreline is 2-2, by the way.
I thought you were going to be nice and positive and go and give us a win.
Well, that is positive. I'd say it's the toughest away game of the season. 2-2 draw, I'd bite your hand off for it. Started the day, end of the day, he started it, and move on. Might give Arsenal a chance to sneak into the top, but it's a fight another day.
I still stand by it. Liverpool need to win if they're going to have a chance further on. Just because, you look, they've missed out on a title by a goal line clearance and then a couple of goals here. You need to make these 6 points.
They did get beat 4-0 at Man City and win the league by 18 points, so...
Oh, well. That was the one other year, wasn't it? The years when it's actually been close and it's gone to the wire. I just want to have one more prediction from you all before we finish, and that's, does Salah get his records this weekend? Does he get the 150th Prem goal, or does he get... Well, and does he get the 200th Liverpool goal?
I don't think he'll score two. I think he's got a good shot of getting the 150, yeah.
Agreed, yeah.
What he said.
Oh, he's still all being so negative. He wanted a bit of positive.
You literally just said that Mohamed Salah's going
to
score.
You said he scores one and it'll be 4-1 to Man City. That's not positive.
4-1, to be fair.
Okay, there you go. Anyway, thanks for tuning in. It's gone a bit chaotic here, but maybe that's what Liverpool need on the pitch tomorrow. Stay tuned to our website and our YouTube channel for all the reaction from the Etihad. Gorsty will be there, I'll be there, Doyley will be there, and then you've got Beth at Prenton Park on Sunday. Hopefully it's going to be a marvellous weekend for everyone of the Liverpool persuasion.
You've been listening to the Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.